particularly for women who are excellent in terms of handicrafts, handlooms, we find are wonderful seed producers. Practically, these women are illiterate who produce a hybrid seed, cotton seed. There will not be a single selfing, 100% crosses, beautifully done. Millions of hectares have been grown with hybrid cotton. Again, a case of appropriate technology, something which is which you may laugh at, which is totally irrelevant under the conditions in this country. Now, similarly, in terms of nutrient supply, although economically green manure crops, nitrogen-fixing legumes may or may not be economically viable in many developed countries, they are the sources of choice in many developing countries for soil fertility restoration. One can, and with the development of the new green manure, the nitrogen-fixing stem-nodulating species, both Sesbania rostrata, the French scientists, the Ostrom scientists in Senegal, identify Sesbania rostrata, Ashamoni species, and so on. We have now enormous capacity. We find the Sesbania rostrata in my institute within 45 days, giving enough nitrogen for about 4 tons of rice crop. They add very large, very fast producers of fixing nitrogen, because both in the rhizosphere and in the stem. Now, this is again a case of appropriate technology, and today we should try to transfer the genes for stem nodulation to other locally adapted green manure crops and so on. The advantage of a green manure crop or a biofertilizer like Azolla, Azolla-Anabina symbiosis, is that fertilizer loss during the monsoon season, either due to ammonia volatilization or nitrification, denitrification or leaching losses, is very high in many parts of South and Southeast Asia. This is one of the reasons why farmers, even rich farmers, are very reluctant to apply urea, because they know that the loss is very high, fertilizer loss. And that is where the biofertilizers, whether it is Azolla, blue-green algae, or green manure crops, become very important. And today, again, thanks to biotechnology, it has become possible to hybridize different species of Azolla. We have a lot of problems. The major breakthrough, again, made at Fuchao in China, at the China Azolla Research Center, jointly with the microbiology department of IRI. They have jointly worked out methods by which today we can hybridize different species of Azolla. And many of them, some of you know about Azolla, like Azolla pinnata and Filiculoides, they have complementary characters. If we can combine them, we may be able to enhance the utility of this kind of biofertilizers. So what we are now trying to do is to add the word sustainability. We had a network called International Soil Fertility and Fertilizer Evaluation Advice. We are just converting it into International Soil Fertility and Sustainable Rice Farming. Instead of depending only on chemical fertilizers, have an integrated nutrient supply system, including biofertilizers, organic manures, green manures, and the minimum quantity of chemical fertilizers which are necessary. Integrated pest management. So the Sustainable Rice Farming International Network for Sustainable Rice Farming aims to measure the stability of the production system over time, over time. The other important requirement in terms of technology, appropriate technology development, is to optimize the meteorological benefits, the growing conditions, the agroecological conditions. For example, in parts of Bangladesh, parts of India, and many other countries, rice-wheat rotation has become very important. Now, there may be a rice breeder, there may be a wheat breeder, who may be both looking at rice yield or wheat yield separately. But what is necessary under these conditions is to look at the integrated production system of rice and wheat, because every week's delay in the sowing of wheat immediately leads to a drop in wheat yield. And therefore, if we are working breeding varieties for a rice-wheat rotation, the rice must go out sufficiently on time so that the wheat can be planted in the most optimum period. The integration of agro-meteorological data into the breeding program has become very important. Let me tell you another system, appropriate system. The rice fish farming is a very popular farming system in many parts of South and Southeast Asia, particularly where there is enough water. But if you apply chemical pesticides in the system, it becomes very risky. And that is why we have an integrated pest management cum aquaculture jointly with another international center called ICLAM, the International Center for Living Aquatic Resources. IRI and ICLAM jointly have a program in which we try to introduce modern aquaculture techniques in rice fields, either after rice or concurrently with rice, and particularly in areas where there is deep water, because as you know, some rices can grow several meters tall. Under those conditions, we can take fish, but it is important to apply an integrated pest management technique. Biocontrol measures today are becoming, we have a collaborative program here with Boyce Thompson Institute, with Don Roberts and his group, in terms of the whole area of biological control. And we have a scientist from Boyce Thompson working with us, a young couple, who are a brilliant work in terms of entomophagous pathogens and so on. Now, there are great opportunities today. In the next stage of the Green Revolution, great opportunities. And above all, in terms of appropriate technology, science and technology, the biomass utilization, not merely for energy purposes, because the agricultural biomass is the most important feedstock or residues available in villages in developing countries. And how do we use it today? In most cases, we don't use it properly at all. I have been pressing FAO. They published the World Food Statistics. For example, last year, in 1986, the world produced, let us say, 2,000 million tons of various forms of food grains, wheat, rice, corn, and so on. But the plants, these plants also produce 4 billion tons of rest of the biomass, taking one third as the harvest, average harvest index. You have, if 2 billion tons of cereals and other food grains were produced, you had a 4 billion ton biomass. Have we asked ourselves the question, how are we using these 4 billion tons of biomass in the world? And today there are, for example, European Economic Community developed the concept of an agricultural refinery. An agricultural refinery in which one can produce a whole series of fractions from the cereal crop. This is the kind of technology which is very relevant today in the developing countries. Action point 5 is knowledge and skills sharing, because whatever technology we'll have, unless there is the extension services and the support services can take this technology to the field, people will not take benefit. The word technical literacy means taking the latest techniques to illiterate farming families. In other words, we have to bypass the normal literacy route. It will take time. It doesn't mean one should not work on literacy, but it's going to take time. Meanwhile, are we going to deny them the benefits of new technology? There are methods today, both through mass media on the one hand, and by demonstrations, by learning, by doing, a number of methodologies by which we'll have to take the new technologies to the field. And above all, there has to be synchronization in skill and input transfer. Sometimes there is excellent knowledge transfer systems, but the input transfer systems do not keep pace with knowledge transfer, with the result that these farmers again cannot derive benefit. I just put on this slide to show some of you who are particularly ecologists might have read books from the Himalayas called the Chipko movement. That is, these women who hug the trees. When a contractor comes to fell the tree with his axe, the woman hugged them so that the man cannot really cut the tree. This is a very famous movement, and is started by these women, really. These women, they are not ecologists, they are not going to school, but they are the most practicing ecologists in the world. In other words, the one thing which has been destroyed in the last 20 years is the notion that because illiteracy and acceptance or adaptation of modern technology are not incompatible, because they have got profound common sense, they live with the earth, and therefore these women come and plead. When people come to cut the trees, they say, please don't cut them, because you are completely threatening our livelihood security. And they can, I have seen again and again, these people can take, as I showed you the picture earlier, of hybrid cotton hand pollination. I have seen illiterate women in some parts of India and some parts of Southeast Asia extracting pituitary glands, injecting them for aquaculture induced breeding. They do it exceedingly well. So the most sophisticated technologies can be taught, provided our skill transfer systems are appropriate to a local cultural milieu. The one aspect of extension which has not received adequate attention, and I know there are several people here interested in extension methodology, is group 3. Usually extension, including the T&B system, the training and visit system, of extension supported by the World Bank in a very big way. Billions of dollars are being provided by the World Bank for this T&B system. They are all based upon individual farming family and individual farmer action. We find as the farm size goes down, Most of the knowledge-intensive technologies, where we want to substitute knowledge for capital, and most of the modern technologies are knowledge-intensive. Knowledge-intensive technologies and cost-reducing technologies like integrated pest management, integrated nutrient supply, scientific water management, soil and water management, improved post-harvest technology, most of them cannot be done by an individual smallholder. They have to be done by a group action, by a group of people in a watershed. In other words, this group three area of extension requires, in my view, increasing attention, particularly in countries where land is individually owned and where the land size is small. Group two is exceedingly important. Some of the Green Revolution critics have always confused between a small farm and a small farmer. A small farm is ideal for the utilization of knowledge-intensive modern technology. In fact, there is no other solution, no other salvation for a small farm except modern technology. But a small farmer is a word, is an euphemism for a farmer who has no access to inputs, who has no access to knowledge, who has no access to markets and so on. In other words, then the problems of the small farmer can be solved only by the socio-political administration. The small farm has to be the target of technology developers, particularly in countries where small farm is the normal norm. And unless we make this distinction between a small farm as a responsibility of technologists, the small farmer as the person who has to be helped by appropriate government or private non-governmental agencies to take advantage of technology, we will be mixing up the two issues, and thereby there will be a lot of confusion as to who is to do what. Action point six is obviously resource mobilization and utilization. Now, there are three important resources available nationally and internationally: financial resources, technical resources, and commodity resources. Now, I feel that we must have an integrated policy of utilizing all these resources. For example, whether it is European Economic Community or United States, you have a surplus of commodity resources. The Food for Development, Food for Fees, PL480 programs, one always hears both to and fro. People will criticize them as eroding self-confidence and self-reliance. Some others will say this is a very important program. What is important is look at the resource utilization in such a way that promotion of self-reliance becomes the basis of all resource utilization. And commodity resources can be utilized very effectively for three purposes: humanitarian purposes, for which it is being used all the time through the World Food Program and so on; ecological restoration purposes, where one must put a degraded land, not immediately under agriculture, but over a period of 20 years or so for eco-restoration; then the Food for Development or Food for Peace work is very important; and finally, agricultural self-reliance. I shall not bother you with detail, but there is an enormous opportunity here for the integrated use of technological resources, technical assistance programs, financial resources, and commodity resources in a very interesting way. And in fact, if you can use it, the present hunger can be overcome very quickly. In fact, if there is an integrated strategy for utilizing the available resource. The last of the 7 points which we made for ensuring sustainable nutrition security is political commitment and accountability. Because in the ultimate term, it's a political commitment to sustainable development in terms of resource allocation, political commitment to the eradication of hunger. These are exceedingly important. At the same time, public awareness, unless people have access to information. Yesterday at the CGIAR, the consultative group meeting in Washington, there was an interesting discussion on gender issues. And several speakers said the greatest problem, there was a lady from Zambia, she said our greatest problem is access to information. Our people in the villages do not have access to knowledge or information. Public awareness of what is possible, what are the rights and responsibilities. In fact, Professor Amartya Sen, in all his books on famine, has been making a very important point. Wherever there is a free press, he says that it is not likely famine cannot occur, because there is this awareness. The press immediately says there is a problem here, you have an early warning. After all, even the Ethiopian famine intervention was started by the BBC's own news correspondents and so on. So we have a tremendous opportunity today for public education and awareness, whether in terms of what technology options are available or in terms of ecological restoration and so on. I have been pleading for some time some kind of an amnesty environment or a methodology to monitor national heritage violations. Because you know we talk about human rights violations, but it is equally important. Heritage violations are equally important. In other words, destroying a forest, not due to natural disasters. Even the word desertification, the meaning of desertification, or the definition of desertification is all man-made causes which either reduce or destroy the biological potential of land. How can we try to monitor these kinds of damages as an early warning so that we can try to prevent them? That becomes exceedingly important in the years to come. Can I have the lights on, please? Well, ladies and gentlemen, let me summarize this talk on Green Revolution Revisited. My first point is, but for the fact that if Green Revolution is used to signify a technological change in agriculture, stagnant agriculture moving forward as a result of the introduction of either high-yielding varieties, other forms of technology, seed, fertilizer, water, management technology, we would have been in a serious position today. I think anybody who is giving a talk today on food and agriculture would have presented a totally different scenario of what is happening. The second important point is that as the farm size in many developing countries goes down, the only option available is a technological upgradation of the productivity of the land. And is equally important because if you want to attract and retain young people in agriculture, Mahatma Gandhi mentioned it in my country many years ago, so long as agriculture is concerned as a vocation which requires only brawn and no brain, as soon as you get educated, you will go to the city looking for a job. In other words, then agriculture is left in the hands of illiterate peasantry. He said, we must marry brain and brawn. After all, brain is technology. And without it, young people in many developing countries, including India, over 50% of the people are below the age of 19 or 20. How are these people going to take interest in agriculture? And the only thing that would interest them is some kind of excitement. Apart from agriculture as a way of living and a means of livelihood, it is important there is also an intellectual stimulation. Therefore, technological upgradation of farming is exceedingly important. And the third most important point is these changes will have to be done in the context of the long-term sustainability of the production process. In other words, for short-term gain, we should not mortgage the future productivity of land. Fortunately, today in science, we have the answers to science and technology. If properly utilized in an integrated way, we can produce nutrition security on a sustainable basis. That's a great challenge that requires a much greater order of interdisciplinary interaction than what we have been able to achieve. And I say interdisciplinary interaction, it is not merely between technologists, biotechnologists, and the rest of the technologists, but above all between social scientists and biological scientists, the technology developers and the social scientists. That is a great challenge which is ahead of us. I am very optimistic. Many people ask, are the problems getting, of course, if there is a political difficulties, political failures, political disturbances, then you find nothing will happen. Countries which are exporting countries, Cambodia was a major rice producing and exporting country. Today is in a deep trouble. This year there's been severe drought, largely because political disturbances have completely affected the agricultural progress. But without political stability, nothing else will happen. But I think we have, as those in charge of technology development, technology diffusion, knowledge transfer mechanisms, we have a tremendous opportunity today not to react, but be proactive. In other words, social scientists should not say the Green Revolution has done harm. I always say that you should tell us how to do things right. That is more important. A postmortem of what went wrong is equally important. But it is more important to say how things can be done right. And if it can be done, the Green Revolution has certainly given a breathing spell, a time, as many people have used the word. It has provided a breathing spell for the next 10 or 15 years by which we can get all these things in position. But if we don't move along those lines, then the doomsday prediction may still come true. It's in our hands to avoid it. Thank you very much for your patient listening.
A lot of people probably have transportation obligations, obviously. So maybe if you have questions, please feel free to come up and talk with Dr. Swaminathan or join us at 5 o'clock in 232 Warren. Sir, thank you very much.